what do you want to da da da?
I don't know. What do y'all think we should da da da?
Well, what did we da yesterday?
Yesterday.
All the dolls feel like the same doll these days.
I know.
Like, is ta-da Monday or Tuesday?
Ta-da is Thursday.
Oh no, I forgot to call my mom on her birthday.
Oh no!
No!
These days, nothing is normal and everything is weird. But you could still save big when you switch to Progressive. That won't change. Not ta-da or any da.
Quote ta-da at Progressive.com.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates.
HD Smartcast.
You are listening to a Mint production brought to you by HD Smartcast.
Hi everyone, welcome back to Delhi Decoded. I'm Pritika Khanna, your host, and I'm here with your weekly update from the national capital. In this podcast, each episode we pick a pin code from Delhi and dive into the most famous buildings, landmarks, and stories from that pin code. For those of you who are from Delhi, I'm sure you have some very special memories from these places. For those of you who aren't, don't worry, I'll help you get a peek into the pulse of Delhi.
Hamari apni Delhi.
Winter months in Delhi used to be about clear blue skies and the winter sun. Now, over the years, winter means the exact opposite. It is the time when skies turn grey and the air we breathe
comes heavy. The Central Pollution Control Board in 11003 even has signs displaying air quality levels. In the winter, checking levels of PM2.5 are as normal as checking the day's temperature. Governments both at the center and the state are also stepping up monitoring measures during this time. It is an ongoing debate on what really the cause of this is. Could it just be stubble burning from the neighboring states? Or is it because a high concentration of vehicles in Delhi that caused this? I have with me Siddharth Singh, who is an energy and climate policy researcher. He's also the author of The Great Smog of India. He'll help us decode why Delhi has such high levels of air pollution and the role stubble burning plays in all of this. Hi Siddharth, welcome to Delhi Decoded.
Hi Pritika, thanks so much for having me.
So over the last few years, Delhi has now started to come into the news for all the wrong reasons, especially in the winter months. It's known for bad air and everything that follows. Why do you think Delhi has to battle such extreme pollution levels each year? Do you think stubble burning is really the main cause of this? If that is the case, won't, neighboring states where the actual burning takes place face a major brunt of it?
So I think this is a very contentious question. I say that because, every year this debate kind of reemerges into the public consciousness and we find a lot of different groups blaming each other for the problem. Okay. So, as an example, of course, when it's pointed out that a certain percentage of emissions in Delhi comes from agriculture fires, a lot of people will say that, oh, but why are you blaming the farmers when in fact it is the transport sector or the industries that are causing the problem? So the fact of the matter is that in Delhi, the air pollution problem is actually a collection of 20% problems. What I mean by that is that if you look at the pie charts that show where Delhi's air pollution is coming from, there are at least five key sectors that kind of emerge, right? So it's not that there is one thing that is a low-hanging fruit that we can go after, and that is in fact the major cause of this problem. So if you want me to, I can like very quickly go through what these different shares are and what it means in terms of where this problem is coming from in the first place. So these studies that look at, where air pollution is coming from, they're called source apportionment studies. So you basically try to figure out where this problem is coming from. And there are five key sectors or five key sources of the problem. The first is transport, which of course through, diesel trucks, cars, and in fact, a lot of people aren't aware, but two-wheelers are actually one of the biggest problems because just the sheer number of two-wheelers compared to other modes of road transport. So transport is number one. Second is cooking and residential sector. So this means that, at home we are cooking using, many poor people, especially in rural areas around Delhi, end up using biomass instead of LPG, right? So that is a major source of air pollution, not just outdoors, but as well indoors inside the house as well. And then of course there's electricity consumption, which, air conditioners are a major factor, that are a major source of energy, electricity demand, especially in summer months. So that is cooking and residential. The third major sector is industries and services. So industries, this refers to any manufacturing that is happening, which often ends up using coal to generate the heat that is required for that manufacturing. This includes, of course, iron and steel, petrochemicals. In Delhi, the major problem with industries around is brick kilns. So there are thousands of little brick manufacturers which use outdated technologies, therefore end up being one of the major causes of air pollution. So that is the third major sector or source of the problem. The fourth is dust. Now, dust can be, just the reality of life that, Rajasthan is on the west of Delhi, and therefore winds kind of carry some of the dust. But it's not just Rajasthan or not just, fields around Delhi, but it's also due to construction activity, also due to dust that is kicked up from the roads as cars go on it or as bikes go on it. And then finally, it is biomass burning, which includes agriculture fires. So these stubble burning is in fact a major part of the problem. But all of these five sectors that we have spoken of so far have about on an average about a 20% share of the problem. Of course, different studies at different times of the year will show some variance, but it's usually these five are the key sources of the problem. Now, it's not just that all of this is happening within Delhi. You actually made a very important point that if it is actually stubble burning, then you could say that the problem is elsewhere. In fact, as things stand, depends on the time of the year, obviously, but anywhere up to 30 or 40% of Delhi's air pollutants can be sourced from outside. But this also has a very important lesson then for us, that if about 60% of the air pollution comes from Delhi itself, that means Delhi can actually do something to reduce its air pollution levels within its own borders. We don't actually have to rely on other states. But of course, point taken on stubble burning, that at the peak, which is going to happen in the next couple of weeks, in the beginning of November or the end of October, we'll have a peak. At that time, about 50% of all of air pollutants in Delhi is sourced through stubble burning alone. So, although in the year it may average out, but at the peak, this is definitely, at least half the problem. So, I think in general, we must recognize that it's not Delhi's problem alone. In fact, 14 of the top 20 most polluted cities in the world are in North India, right? And in fact, to go one step forward, it's not just a city problem. It is as much as a rural problem. In fact, 70% of the deaths that happen due to air pollution happen in rural India. So therefore, to sum up, there is no low-hanging fruit. It is a multifaceted problem. And to really address this issue, we must deal with all these five major sectors from which air pollution emanates. This is both within Delhi as well as outside of it.
So it's sort of unfair to just pin the blame on stubble burning.
Absolutely. To be fair, like I said, in the peak of the season, that is, it is the biggest contributor. Therefore, there is no argument that we must not do anything about it. We obviously have to do something. In fact, we have to do a lot about it. But for the rest of the year, we must also concentrate on transport. We must also concentrate on industries and electricity generation and others.
You were just mentioning some data on the deaths that take place because of air pollution. What are the long-term health impacts for the residents of places like Delhi who have to deal with such high levels of AQI on a regular basis?
In fact, the health impact on Delhi due to air pollution is almost crisis levels. It is indeed a public health emergency, which we have not framed it in as many words. But if you think about the numbers, they're quite staggering. In India as a whole, in the whole country, there are over 1.2 million premature deaths every year that are attributable to air pollution. In fact, in the city of Delhi alone, more people die in Delhi prematurely every week due to air pollution than from all the terrorist attacks that have taken place in Delhi in the past 20, 30 years. So you can imagine, just every week we are having the equivalent of terrorist attacks happening in the city in terms of its mortality, but we don't know about it because these deaths are you know, they're staggered, they're quiet, they're happening in hospital ICUs, emergency rooms, and we're not able to put all these stories together to understand the real impact of air pollution. But of course, you know, it's not the question of just people dying. There are also other health impacts. So if I mean, the list is long, but I'll just very quickly go through two or three of the key ones that kind of we encounter. But first, just to understand, why does air pollution kill in the first place? You know, what is it about air pollution that makes it dangerous to us? So air pollution itself is not one thing. It is actually a collection of various types of particles and pollutants, you know, including particulate matter, which could be in the form of acids, metals, and so on. You know, just these particles are so tiny. Mm-hmm. They're about 1/20th the width of human hair. In fact, even smaller than that, which means that when you breathe, it goes straight through the defenses of the body, you know, the nose hair and the other defenses that you may have in the lungs, and goes straight into the bloodstream. And therefore, from the bloodstream, it can be carried on towards any of the various organs of the human body, therefore causing many issues such as heart attacks, heart diseases of various types, strokes, their lung cancers and other forms of cancers, diabetes. In fact, India is the diabetes capital of the world. Until recently, we didn't realize, but air pollution is one of the leading causes of diabetes. So therefore, there may be a linkage there. Right.
No,
and then there is exactly, I think many of these studies are so new, you know, as one more thing that I did not have an idea about until just day before yesterday, you know, air pollution also causes Alzheimer's. And again, you know, until these studies are actually properly done, we don't even realize the different linkages that air pollution has, because at the end of the day, you're thinking of what is air pollution? We're basically pumping undesirable elements into various organs of the body, you know. Of course, the body will react and not in a good way. Now, it goes actually beyond just all of these kind of health impacts. There are also other health impacts that are little, you know, under the radar. For example, there was a study that was done in Colombia where they found that children who grow up in a high air pollution region, they end up having lower or reduced cognitive skills, which means that they're poorer at math, they're poorer at, you know, learning in schools, to the extent that they have an impact on their future incomes even 10 years later or 20 years later when they eventually get a job and all of that. They earn less than kids who grow up in cleaner air regions. So, you know, which basically shows that air pollution can impact your learning abilities. And there was this one very famous study that was done by a cancer institute, which showed that 40% of Delhi's children have reduced lung function. So they may not be able to be as good as sports or, you know, just physically productive compared to children who grow up in cleaner air regions. So therefore, of course, this is a very multifaceted problem, and it really impacts the human body in ways that hard to even imagine, honestly.
Yeah, it's true. Most of these impacts we'll only see years from now. It's not something, because, you know, air is, we don't realize how deep an impact it has to us.
Absolutely.
So, you know, it's that time of the year now where, as winter months approach, governments also start getting into action. We've seen, you know, the central government is taking meetings with all the states in North India to figure, you know, how they can tackle air pollution. Delhi government has also started taking initiative to, you know, they've launched a war room. Do you think that the steps that are being taken both in the center and by the state government are enough? And, you know, what is it that Delhi really needs to solve its air pollution crisis?
Okay, so I think you're absolutely correct that, you know, if to a layperson, if you were following the news, you would see that a lot of activity is happening. You know, the government is seen to be responding, but we're still not able to really overcome the problem. So why is that? So first, let's look at what exists in terms of action. Okay, so on paper, India has it all. You know, on paper, it can be argued that, you know, we have done whatever we could to the extent possible, of course, with a few, you know, tweaks here or there. So, for example, on paper, we have the laws such as the AIR Act, which has been around for a few decades now, which is quite stringent in terms of, you know, laying benchmarks for industries and, you know, other polluters, and incorporating principles such as polluter pays and so on. You have specialist courts such as the National Green Tribunal, which, you know, which provides dedicated redressal towards environmental problems. Then you have institutions such as the Central Pollution Control Board, the State Pollution Control Boards. Then you have, you know, at the national level, the government recently came out with a national clean air program, you know, which has a target of reducing air pollution by 20 or 30% by 2024, which is just around the corner. Then you also have policies which are dedicated to specific industries. For example, you have policies for electric vehicles, that, you know, there are subsidies so that people buy electric rather than diesel or petrol. You have, you know, schemes by the government that encourage LPG use instead of biomass. You have schemes for solar power instead of, say, coal or something else. So, and in fact, you also have laws for stubble burning, into the extent that there are, you know, fines if you do it, and there are even subsidies. Now, on paper, if you read all of this, you'll be like, well, you know, what else can a person do, right? Everything is being done. Yeah. But despite all of this, there are several reasons why we have not succeeded at overcoming the problem. And, you know, I will just very quickly go through what I think the top five or six kind of overarching themes are as to why we are failing at addressing this problem. Okay, so firstly, I think one of the key reasons why we haven't succeeded, despite having all these great laws and tools and all of that, is that many of these sectors which pollute, they pollute because of very structural reasons. These structural reasons, like technological and the fact that investments have been made, how do you undo them? You know, as an example, take industries. Now, industries largely use coal in India, okay? And the kind of energy you need for industries is high heat, which is cannot be provided by renewables that easily. So you have to use some form of fossil fuel. Unfortunately, in India, so far, we don't have a good network of natural gas pipelines that can feed all these industries. And even if we do, sometimes this natural gas is too expensive. Or maybe these industries have already made investments into coal and they still haven't, you know, recuperated their costs. So therefore, industries may not have a easy way to transition away to natural gas, which is cleaner. It does not pollute the same way. Okay. So that is a structural reason. There could be other structural reasons, for example, in stubble burning. You know, it's not that farmers are doing this because they get some fun out of it. They're doing it because they have no other options. It's just, we'll discuss, stubble burning separately, but there are too many structural reasons that have locked them into this position. So the first reason why we have failed to address the problem is structural. The second is, something that we had previously discussed, that there is, because of the nature of, you know, the different sources. Now, we talked about transport, we talked about industry, we talked about agriculture sector. Similarly, within each state also, there are different institutions which look at it. In a city like Delhi, you have the Central Public Works Department, you have MCD, at least three different elections that determine the municipal issues of Delhi. One is the state elections, one is the MCD elections, and the third is the central election, because some of the agencies are actually centrally owned. So there is, you know, a multitude of agencies and they don't coordinate amongst each other. Okay. So which again is not surprising. Then of course there are interstate issues like your Punjab and Haryana and Delhi working together. So therefore there are coordination issues. That's the second reason why we have failed to address this problem. The third one is that, and this may sound a little controversial, but it's not. Third one is that we have actually ignored the interests of the polluters. Okay. What this means is, I'm not talking about those polluters who are willfully polluting and, you know, they're bribing their way out of problems. And I'm not talking about those people deserve justice. I'm talking about polluters in the sense that farmers are polluters, or a poor person who uses a motorcycle to get to work. He's also a polluter, but they're not polluting out of, you know, any malice. They're polluting because that's the technology that's available to them. Yeah. So to address this problem, we have to find ways, or we have to enable them to transition to better things, to better outcomes. So that's how we have to keep the interest of the polluters in mind, so that if we work with them, maybe we will be able to overcome the problem. The fourth reason is that these, you know, pollution control boards or other agencies that look at reducing air pollution, they don't have the legal or the technical know-how or even the manpower to actually deal with the problem. Sometimes it's very absurd. Like I talk to these pollution control board officials in some entire districts. You may just have two or three people, and you'll have situations where a person who's trained as an engineer literally on his first or second job, or, you know, it's the first or second year of service, and they are having to write the legal, you know, paperwork to start a case proceeding against a company which is polluting. Now, how will an engineer with no training be able to do that? You know, so we don't have the necessary human resources to take care of the problem. So that's a fourth major issue. The fifth major issue is that we actually are looking at this problem in a very piecemeal manner, that it's a Delhi problem, or it's a Gurgaon problem, or it's an XYZ problem.
Mm.
In fact, what we really need is an airshed approach. Airshed meaning, it's basically, think of if you had to clean a huge lake, how would you do it? You would not start with a small corner and start cleaning that corner. You would have to clean the water of the whole lake together. Right?
Yeah.
So think of the atmosphere also in air sheds. So there's an air shed around Delhi. Hmm. If we were to clean the entire, you know, if we had an action plan for the whole of, say, Punjab, Haryana, Delhi, and Western Uttar Pradesh, this forms one airshed that we can collectively kind of address, because the way the winds blow and the way the meteorological conditions are, we'd be able to clean this air together. So that is something that we have not done. I think we need to look at this airshed approach. And, you know, the final point, I think, is that India in general doesn't have a overarching blue skies policy, so to speak. We have, I mean, the National Clean Air Program is a step in the right direction, but we need to be more expansive, and we need to make it a core bedrock of all policies in the country, including, you know, when you think of, if you think of the industrial policy, it will not really mention air pollution. But I think if it had, at its core, it had some policy for clean fuel usage, all of those kind of things could potentially help, you know, us deal with this problem in a more comprehensive manner.
That's a lot to think about. Coming to stubble burning, as you very correctly mentioned, you know, farmers don't really know what it's something that they've been doing for years. They don't have access to the right kind of techniques to solve it. Options that are available are way more expensive, so that, you know, not all farmers can even take those up. Recently, the Pusa Research Institute has come out with a new technique which melts stubble. I know it's very new, but do you think techniques like this could be helpful in the long run?
Yes, I think with the Pusa, you know, decomposer, it remains to be seen. But before we get to the Pusa, just to understand why is this even a problem, and why we are having to think about issues or solutions such as, you know, these Pusa decomposers. So firstly, to understand this problem, stubble burning is extremely complex and very structural. So it is resulted out of, in fact, the Green Revolution. You know, back in the day, Punjab did not have the so-called rice wheat cropping system. You know, right now, when we think of Punjab, we think of green, lush green fields. We think of tractors. We think of, you know, it being the food bowl of India, right? But that was not always the case. This happened, you know, in the Green Revolution, we were able to get we were able to get motorized pumps to every corner of especially that region. And we were able to get certain forms of hybrid varieties of seeds and the various other necessary policies to implement two crops in a year, you know, rice followed by wheat, did not previously exist. Therefore, this time period between the rice and the wheat, you know, crops or the harvest, that became a little too short over time. It became short partly also because of the subsoil acts. Because so much water was being drawn, the governments basically put rules that you cannot sow the seeds before a certain date, because they wanted to ensure that the harvest cycle coincides with the monsoons. Because that way, you know, people will use less groundwater, which will therefore save groundwater. So to solve one problem, we shrunk the time between the two crops. And then therefore, farmers had no choice but to burn it down. Of course, then there are also issues such as the minimum support prices, which encourage rice and wheat in such large quantities, especially from these regions. So these are the main reasons why, you know, we have kind of painted ourselves into a corner. So to actually overcome this issue in the long run, we'll have to deal with all these problems in a more structural manner. Right now, the things that we have tried include, number one, we have tried to, you know, deal with this issue with machines, you know, these happy seeders and super SMS machines and so on. But the issue is that most farmers in India are actually small landowners. They're not, they don't own, you know, huge tracts of land, therefore cannot afford this kind of machinery. In fact, even renting this machinery often becomes too expensive for them. So, which is why, you know, they have not really, these machines have not really succeeded as much. You know, there are also issues that there are long queues that form in terms of, like, if you ask for one today, you may get it 3 weeks later or you may not, you know, and there are a lot of issues with availability of this machinery. And then there's also issues that this machinery actually doesn't solve the problem fully, because it still leaves behind a little bit of stubble. And that little bit of stubble is actually very, you know, spiky, and it cannot be easily kind of dealt with. So that kind of becomes an issue. Then secondly, the government also tried, you know, putting subsidies to collect this stubble. They put 100 rupees per hectare. Sorry, I'm forgetting the exact value, but it was, you know, they put like a certain subsidy to ensure that farmers, instead of burning it, they collect the stubble and then they kind of give it to the government. Unfortunately, these, you know, farmers have complained that either this money has not come to them, or in any case, they still prefer to burn it down, because, you know, it still may be cheaper than actually cutting it and then taking it to the government and all those kind of things.
Also much easier.
Finally, yeah, I mean, just think about it. If the easiest thing for you, no matter what, will still be a, you know, a 2 rupee or 1 rupee matchbox. It's still cheaper than, I mean, of course, they require some diesel or something to kind of set it on fire, but it's still cheaper than the time and effort it takes to do all these other things, which is why, you know, it's always going to be easier for them, unless we really make it more profitable for them to not cut it down. And of course, what the Pusa decomposer does is that it is basically a cocktail of microbes. And it is in, they have to make it into liquid form, and then they kind of put it over the stubble that remains. Apparently, the claim is that it reduces the decomposition time to 25 days instead of the usual 3 months that, you know, it takes for stubble to decompose. But it remains to be seen whether something like this will be successful. I mean, obviously, congratulate the researchers at the Indian Agriculture Research Institute who have come up with this Pusa decomposer. But it remains to be seen how successful it will be, because this also requires work. It's not as simple as burning something like that down. I think eventually, in the long run, you know, as far as stubble burning goes, we will have to think of crop diversification away from rice and wheat. You know, this includes changes to the minimum support prices. And as you can see, with farmer protests happening in Punjab and Haryana, it's already a very complex political issue.
Yeah, exactly. That's a much
issue. So I think, in the words of M.S. Swaminathan, who was instrumental, you know, behind the Green Revolution, he has now realized that, you know, or not realized, rather, he's been doing excellent work in this field, and he's kind of been flagging some of the issues that have come about in the last few decades, including groundwater usage and, you know, stubble burning and all of that. So he has called for an evergreen revolution, which makes agriculture more sustainable in the country. And I think that's the path we need to really head down if we have to deal with this in the long run.
We all hope for more sustainable options in the future, for sure. Though this year may not be the best year for implementing them, because everything might be delayed because of COVID. But there's clearly a huge gap in the way we need to tackle air pollution. Thank you, Siddharth, for giving us such great insights on the issue today.
No, thank you so much for having me, and it was a pleasure talking to you.
That's all from me this week. I'll be back next week with a new PIN code. Until then, please like, subscribe, and share this episode. We're always looking to hear your thoughts and suggestions. We're ever present on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at HT Smartcast. You can also reach out to me directly on Twitter at Pritika Khanna. Thank you so much for joining in. See you next time. Until then, stay safe and healthy.
This was a Mint production brought to you by HT Smartcast.
HT Smartcast.
I'm Annie. Apple, and I'm here to invite you to come and listen to my new podcast series, Raising a Pro. It's the most intimate sports-related conversations you will hear. Each week, we explore the journeys of some of your favorite NFL players through the eyes of those that know them best. From Joe Burrow, DeAndre Hopkins, Myles Garrett, Ezekiel Elliott, Nick and Joey Bosa, just to name a few. With exclusive insights and information, we leave no stone unturned. Subscribe now to Raising a Pro on your favorite podcast app.